recruiting enthusiasts. I'm Priyanka and welcome to Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast, a podcast for gaining all the insider knowledge about the top recruiters in the tech industry. On this week's episode, we are joined by Vinod Rajaram, who's the talent acquisition leader APAC at Verifone. He is a seasoned and strategic recruitment leader with extensive experience in the financial services, IT, and global business services sectors. And with over a decade's experience in this industry, he is proficient at all things tech recruiting. Welcome to the podcast, Vinod. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, hi, Priyanka. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me to the podcast and happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm pleased to have you here as well. So how are you doing today, Vinod?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing great as well. And so to start off, can you tell us a bit about yourself and your role at Verifone?
Sure. As you said, I'm Vinod Rajaram, so I am a HR professional with over 12 plus years of experience into TA specifically. Mm-hmm. And I've managed global TA teams across regions, US, Europe, and India. And I'm currently managing the talent acquisition for Verifone, covering the APAC region.
Yeah, amazing. And so has TA always been your passion, or did this industry come to you by chance?
Yes. After my UG undergraduation from a mechanical background, I thought I might not fit into that bucket. I thought I might be more into management. Then I thought I might look out for an HR program. So I did my MBA, and that's how I got into recruitment as a first thing out of my job. So started there, and I'm still there in that space.
Great. So Vinod, besides work, what are your other passions? How do you like to spend your free time?
I am a cyclist, basically. I like to have some activity which happens on the weekends. So I keep cycling as one of the activities which I go along for a ride for every weekend with my community friends.
Nice.
And second thing would be a car enthusiast, basically. Looking into new cars which comes to the market, just driving those cars, just a passion towards driving those machines. And lastly, I've been moved into Bangalore for the last six plus months now. After taking the opportunity with Verifone, so I am right now into exploring places where I can trek with my family, basically. So my kid is four years now, so I'm taking him along. So
nice.
That's a new thing which I've started. Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. And so Vinod, your hiring expertise is predominantly in the financial services industry. I want to get more deep into it in a bit. Before that, so you've also worked in other industries like IT services and E&E manufacturing as well. So how different or similar are the tech hiring and the recruitment practices in these industries?
Yeah, I would differentiate it based on, yes, the industry segregation is there, but I think it should be whether it is a product or a service-based. That defines a lot of changes in terms of tech hiring, because if you look at financial services, the tech hiring would be mostly, the product would be developed in-house, and if at all you're looking out for service providers outside, it will be basically on that specific domain. So you will have a very different type of hiring, tech hiring, when you consider a product-based company. It might be fintech, or it might be the other engineering and manufacturing. So it is more of that. If you take fintech, you will have tech hiring mostly into the products. It's mostly very different from what EA would be. EA would not rely mostly on the tech. They would outsource the tech to the external providers, or like ES industries, they outsource this, and it makes easy in terms of tech hiring in the other areas than the financial services. That's the differentiation I see. Yeah.
Okay, and I'm very keen to understand a bit more about, you know, how you assess talent at Verifone. So what are usually the tech stacks you hire for?
We are basically they're segmented into three parts. One is being development. We do have a lot of applications development side of it, where it involves core Java. We are not into the latest versions of the subskills of Java. We are more on the core Java platforms, which is typical of a product-based company's approach, because That's where we are at, and Kojava being one of it, and other platforms, other tech skills would be C++, platform where we are into payment domains in certain areas where you require the C++ expertise. And in terms of QA, the testing part, we do have a combination of both manual and automation skills into play. And finally, we have the tech support services, the cloud services which we provide. Those are the areas where we hire predominantly throughout the year.
Great. And when it comes to assessment process, can you walk me through your approach to assessing tech talent from, you know, source to hire? And I would like to know, what are the key parameters, you know, you have in mind when you're assessing and, you know, judging the fit when it comes to both hard skills and the soft skills?
Okay. We do have a set assessment process. It is similar across all tech hirings we do. So we go ahead with online assessment. Basically, we use a platform called Codabyte for our assessment. So this is purely tailored for the requirement. We tailored it, all the assessments for the specific jobs, and we send across the online test to the candidates. So first assessment will be basically on to understand whether the basics, they're good at basics, which is key for our industry hiring. So second thing is we then move into a technical panel interview, which would basically deep dive into those skill sets, not just the basic level, just deep dive into those, which will have an interview, technical interview panel. And if at all the person is quite good in terms of our expectations, we bring in a UCAT, which is a Universal Cognitive Aptitude Test. Basically, this is not just about tech aspects. This is about whether the candidate in general has critical thinking as part of his attributes, whether he has problem-solving skills, and how does his attention to detail is, and also the numerical reasoning, whether he is good with logic and analysis. Because this forms a key thing as we build our new products. So it is about complete building of and designing new products. So we look at this as a very key criteria across levels, up to manager or an individual contributor. We get people in UCAT. We want to make sure that they clear those UCAT for us to really go ahead and make those call. And the final would be a hiring manager, who would definitely look on covering the culture fit and the team fit. So those are the aspects which comes at the final level of interview with the hiring manager. So that's how we assess candidates across our open roles. Yeah.
Great. And so you had the APAC hiring in Verifone. So have you faced any roadblocks when it comes to hiring for tech roles in certain regions or countries? Because there may be a shortage of skilled talent in certain areas. And also, like, there may be competition from the other companies for the same talent pool as well, which can make it difficult to find the right candidates. So how have you overcome these challenges, and any tips or examples you would like to share, you know, with us from your experience?
I think everyone would have gone through the challenge during the COVID years. I mean, that's where the market were really abound, and then we couldn't hire people, or we were able to find people, but we couldn't onboard the people. So we had difficulties in that space. So we basically had an approach of 40-30-30. So which is basically whenever a volume of hire forecast which comes in to us on certain business areas, we recommend a 40% of hiring people at early stages. It might be a fresher or a 0 to 1 year experience guys into that bucket. Say for example, I get 10 roles out of it. It is impossible for anyone to fill those 10 roles at the same level. So we basically divide those levels into 40, 30, 30. When I say 30, 30 is between 2 to 6 years of experience where we fill in. And another 30 would basically rely on the high-end guys who are more experienced and who can bring more to the table as an individual contributor who can lead the project. Yes. So that's how we categorized our hiring, which made things easier for the business as well, because we're always sitting at hiring same level of experience, 10, 15 roles on the same level, we're not going to hire them at all.
Yeah.
That's not the practical approach to it. That's kind of made things easy for us. The next thing is the geography. That's the advantage I have. If us being an APAC guy, who can really look at geographical representation of the skills. Say, for example, I have developers across and I need them on different buckets of experiences. If I'm finding any bucket to be difficult, I might look at multiple locations than just being one location specific for that skill, which is helping me in terms of balancing that hiring, and the turnaround time and time to hire be reduces if you're going to strategically move your geographies based on the skill sets. So if we have Manila as a location and any tech support or backend supports, we push it predominantly to Manila because Manila or India, because these are places where I can get people quite fast.
Yeah.
And same way, if you're looking at high-end developers, I might look at India, I might look at Australia. That's where I have more experienced guys and I can get them quick. So that's how I play across. One thing is 40-30-30. And second thing is the geographical segmentation of skills, which really helps us in terms of covering this aspect of roadblocks.
Great. I think they're really very interesting approaches, I must say. And so what sourcing strategies have you found very effective for identifying and attracting the top talent in such, you know, skill talent shortage scenarios?
Yeah. The approach the approach differs from company to company, from team to team. So given we are more product-based, so we have limited number of roles and the expectations of those filling those roles are quite difficult. They are basically difficult to more difficult roles in that space. So what we do is we attract only passive candidates. We don't go back to candidates.
Okay.
First thing is, because one thing, passive candidates, making him listen is very easy than an active candidates, because the candidate isn't interested, but we would put up a sales pitch to make sure that he gets what we are looking to hire and why we are approaching him. We know that he is a passive candidate. That gives him an interest to really seek out this opportunity, whether what this opportunity is about. And we just tell them that just hear all the opportunities. And the passive candidate tends to have more listening skills in compared to an active candidate, because he's already have 3 to 4 employers approaching him and he doesn't even listen to you in terms of what you sell. But it is not the case with the passive candidate. So my approach to the team would be always to work for the passive candidates, because one, they listen to you and they come back with they're really interested to take this forward or not. That will be more genuine in terms of their approach. Third thing, if they're not interested, they will be happy to refer anyone for that position because they're not into the play. So they like to refer. If you're looking for an active candidate to refer someone, he wouldn't be interested in referring anyone until he finds that position to be secured for him in first place. So there's a difference. So basically, I use this as a channel, which is more effective for me. And the ratio is getting better in terms of conversions as well.
Yeah, I think I must say it's a really unique approach. And also, are there any unique challenges which you have faced in financial service industry, which you haven't faced in the other industries?
I think I won't be able to differentiate that, because I've seen it's all it ends to the place where whether you're able to find that resource or not. And given financial services, India has a very good portion of companies who are working in the financial sector for a very long time, not just and then that space it's quite easy. But the only thing which I would look at is a unique initiatives. If you look at the intake sessions, you know, the role gets approved and all the recruiters jump into a call with the manager. But are we really getting into the details of the role? If you really look at it, very few recruiters across the industry really get into those level of details. And we know the roadblocks earlier. If there are a month into the hiring and then interviews happening and nothing moving forward, again, you have to go again and recalibrate your call. My question would be, why can't we bring that recalibration in early stages itself? in the early process. Say, for example, I'm working for you and this is your expectations. And XYZ is a skill you're looking at. If at all we are not getting that skill, what is second expectations? What is your expectations? And that would really break that down. And we can really quickly move forward than waiting for those 1 month, 2 months to go ahead and then recalibrate it because we don't understand the market doesn't have that. That's where we have, I have a unique approach of making sure that everything is ticked at the beginning as part of the intake sessions, which really makes things easy for us to recalibrate it automatically than still waiting for that initial period to get over.
Yeah, I think sounds good. And so when you manage APAC hiring, so how do you ensure that your recruitment strategies are tailored to the unique needs and, you know, characteristics of each APAC market, you know, you're hiring in, and also that your hiring processes are consistent and fair across all the APAC markets?
Yeah, APAC is quite a different region in comparison to EMEA or Americas, because the Americas kind of, you have South and North America, where North is completely English speaking, where South is less of the language barriers. Yeah. But if you look at EMEA, everyone are pretty good at speaking English, as far as my experience is concerned. And if you look at APAC, every country has only three countries or four countries which might have predominant English speaking countries, where you have find a lot of those on English speaking base. But if you look at China, Japan, or Korea, or Taiwan, for me, they are completely different and very unique because of their language. So we categorize based on languages. Say we type Taiwan and China because they're all similar speaking language. They all speak the Chinese language. If you look at Korea, again, we have a different approach. And we also have Hong Kong and Shanghai, which again falls into China and Taiwan. So we categorize them based on those locations specific. And if you are looking for neutral skills, we always look at Singapore, which plays well for us in terms of support or high-end jobs. We get that mix of things. But predominantly we are, and if you look at Australia and New Zealand, they are almost similar.
Yeah.
And their laws are very similar, the skill sets are very similar. So we categorize Australia and New Zealand as one, and we categorize China, Taiwan, and the Hong Kong and Shanghai location as tag them as one. The second thing we look at is the job boards. We look at job boards which has access to multiple locations. We look at Indeed as a job board. It has access to most of the Asia Pacific. So we prefer local channels for reasons such as Chinese-speaking regions, that we have specific boards which cover all these aspects. And we have Indeed as a job board which covers the other countries' aspects, the Indonesia or Philippines. No, they help us in terms of getting those. So that's how we split. The other thing is business divisions. The hiring process will be different for different regions. It's just basically based on division. Say we have IT, which is very similar, and support, which will be very different. And sales and operations, completely different, because we don't have a specific skill set assessment there. It's more of experience-based assessments. So there's a difference between that hiring process between divisions based on regions.
Yeah, I think those are some really great ways. And, you know, it's very important to ensure that candidates have a positive experience during the whole hiring process, but while also like moving quickly to make those hiring decisions as well. So how do you balance the, you know, need for positive candidate experience with the need for speed, accuracy, and also thoroughness in vetting the candidates as well?
Okay, I think candidate experience is something, this is the rock of the dawn for the last 4+ years or 5+ years I've seen. And it is very critical, but it's about whether you have the right ATS for you to support and balance this candidate journey. So that's where a product like Greenhouse, which Verifone uses, it has, again, every ATS has its pros and cons. So when we look at pros alone, we have Greenhouse, which gives the recruiter the real-time analysis of how his roles are working at the moment. Say, for example, we have a goal set for the recruiters. Say, for example, any role is just getting approved, and if it is not, the intake isn't done in 48 hours, the recruiter has a dashboard, which just basically says these many roles, these are the intakes, which is beyond 48 hours. And the candidate application, as you said, the candidate experience is very key. So any application which comes in, we have an SLA to tag to it, and it gets flagged in the recruiter's dashboard every day. Logs in, you have been candidates who have moved beyond the 48 hours SLA of candidate application review. Because if the candidate receives any response, it might be an automated or it might be a reviewed feedback in 48 hours. That sets the tone for the candidate experience. That gives him an acknowledgement that, yes, my profile is viewed. But that is not the case in most of the areas at the moment. So we have this where we don't want to look at manager level of assessing all these SLAs. Instead, we throw it to the recruiters to look at on a daily basis where they stand in terms of their open roles, in terms of their candidate through the application process. So that's kind of a game changer for us in terms of experience. And we automate a lot of communications. Say a candidate is getting offer. Yes, offer is done. What's next? The candidate might be clueless of what's next. So that's where we make sure that there's an automated email which goes, automated push of email which goes, introduces the TA operations person. And the TA operations person picks up and then he gives a message to the hiring manager that, hey, your candidate has accepted and he's in the process of background verification. And the candidate will receive that. We have received your, so as a notification trigger which goes every now and then. And that's a clear communication for the hiring manager on the statuses, which is automated through Greenhouse for us, same way to the candidate on each and every step of this process. And we also have the recruiter in loop, because we don't want to, that's a connection we need to have until the candidate joins. So in that way, we cover most of the aspects, and that really defines the candidate journey in a better way for us.
Yeah, great. And I want to talk to you about the offer to join ratio, because I don't think there is anything more frustrating in recruitment than candidates dropping off, you know, after an offer has been made. So in most cases, I think recruiters go through the, you know, arduous process of sourcing relevant talent, and then they spend hours improving the candidate experience only to be left, you know, empty-handed. So understandably, there are some things that even the best recruiters can't control, but certainly we can take those steps to reduce the drop-offs. So Vinod, from your experience, what are a few effective methods you have found to increase the offer to join ratio, and any tips or examples you can share with us?
Great question. For me, it's about offer to join ratio, absolutely fine, but the work starts before we even speak to the candidate. You know, the work starts on while we start engaging with the candidate at the beginning, asking why is he looking out for a change? Why is he looking out for a new job? Why it is important? What makes him to look out for a job? If you really look at recruiters today, given what's happening in the market, we recruiters go in, we don't ask those questions at all. We say, here is a role, are you interested? And go on by setting up interviews with the managers. We never ever touch into that space of why he's interested and why is he looking for a new job? Why isn't working? What is not working for him in that? So that really gives you an understanding or assessment of what the candidate is really about. You know, if the candidate is looking for multiple opportunities, he's already has shopping across with different organizations, you will get to hear that, you will get to sense that thought about what the candidate is about. And that's really is what is very important. If you can gauge that at the beginning, you tend to know what sort of a person you are, what sort of talent you are approaching, and why they are looking out. That really narrows a lot of, that really breaks down a lot of things. That's the key thing which I look at for my recruiters. Are you selling the role? Are you really talking about what are the benefits which comes along, and how do you really run this for the candidate in terms of, and are you really talking about the culture? Any other benefits which stands out for your specific locations, and do you really make them connect in terms of what product and what development, what global? Say, for example, Verifone has a great global mobility program, you know, which we have seen a lot of people moving across the regions And we really sell that as a big advantage joining Verifone, because you can scale up not just within your location, but you can scale up to be a global role in the near future. That's what differentiates us from others in terms of the race. That's where we make sure that we sell that. And if you look at any tips or any initiatives, I've taken this initiative in my previous organization as well. So what we have is multi-level connects. One is basically a recruiter connect once the offer goes out. Second is a TA ops connect to really let them know that they're going to be the handholder after they join. The next thing is we give them a glimpse of what our policies are, what our benefits are by a discussion with the HR. We basically club a set of who are ready to join us into a session of HR and tell them that's the culture and this is what we are. And finally, we do a business head connect, which is basically, yes, they have met the hiring managers, they have spoken enough, but we want to give them a better exposure, a better experience of connecting them to a business head who can really articulate at a very high level. That really transforms. And we have seen that effective, where we have really got down the ratios, the joining ratio up by 10% from what it was during those tough times in COVID. So I would see that as a great seller and selling tactics or joining tactics to make sure that candidates really are keen towards joining us than ditching us at the last moment.
Yeah, I think greatly put. And yeah, I think I really like the initiatives taken by you and Verifone as well. So, and you mentioned about the Global Mobility Program. Can you shed some light on what it really is and all about it?
Yeah. See, why we really encourage global mobility is because we are very niche in the market. Payment industry, there are lots of payment. If you look at you, it's a handful of payment gateways or payment industries in the market. It's not like if you look at ITES, you will have thousands of companies in ITES. But if you look at anybody into payment solutions, we are very handful. It might be not even across 20 plus or 50 plus organizations across the globe who are into payment solutions. So we are very niche. So that gives us the need to have this global mobility. And what we do is they're all working on specific platforms, specific products for year on year. So losing that talent and bringing someone from outside the market and getting them trained on that platform is very difficult for us. So what we approach is we give them opportunities and they are open to look out for any global opportunities. And if they find that we are matching to their skill set, and we really encourage for them to apply for that. And we have a support system which basically the HR manager would support in terms of sending them across board or considering them for any global roles. As well as we have a roadmap of building certain teams in certain regions where we will look at internal talents to fill that. When I say internal talents, it can be any region where they find that person to be good and they can move to this role and it might be another location. So we are quite open. It's not about internal movement within the region. Within the country, it's about within the global geography.
Yeah, I think that's really great. And I want to talk to you about employee onboarding, because it's something which a lot of folks in a lot of companies struggle with. And it's very crucial to new hire success, and solid onboarding program can boost the retention rate as well. But I think it's an inherently very tricky framework to define, and a lot of companies struggle with this step. So Vinod, what are some of the biggest challenges you have faced when it comes to onboarding new hires, and how did you go about addressing these challenges?
See, I think this is something all the companies have a spot of bother for all the companies, you know, because this is a junction where three teams are into play. One is DAOps, the team which manages the background and then manages to make sure that the candidate onboards. Second thing is the onboarding team, which does the onboarding activity on the day of joining. So there's a handhold between TA ops to onboarding. And then the onboarding team does their work on the first 3 days or whatever the induction timelines are. And then the ownership again moves to the HR and the hiring manager. So it is a junction of multiple teams connecting. So that's where the issue is about, why we we have all the companies face these challenges because if you don't have a robust process in place and a clear ownership defined, it is a joint ownership. It is not a one man's ownership where I've done that and it's on you.
Yeah.
We basically, all the three teams have to, all the four have to join hands and be the ownership. If one fails, the other has to pick up and make sure that that is covered. That is basically, we have a clear system. We have a clear communication channels that are available, which is automated channels as well as in-person channels between the teams as well as between the candidate and the hiring manager. It is a connection of candidate, hiring manager, and the teams involved in terms of onboarding. So this is the junction where an automated system or communication system as well as in-person or automated in-person connection is very important. And it has become very difficult in terms of COVID times where we had to onboard candidates. There are complete disconnect between a new joiner and the team and the hiring manager and the HR because we don't even know how that person is about and how does it feel. So in that space, we have come across and we have built an onboarding mechanism for us, onboarding process, where everyone has a shared ownership, shared responsibility to make sure that the candidate isn't left in the dark at any point of this junction, you know, to make sure that that's connected. So we have a 30-day, 60-day before joining, yes, the hiring manager, the DA ops, the candidate, our recruiter are kept in loop until they join. And once they join, the onboarding team and the HR person is connected and the hiring manager is connected. Make sure that the connection happens and all the system setups, requests are done on time. Third thing, we connect with 30, 60, 90 days. HR connects with the new hires, which basically makes things even more easier for us to understand if there are any challenges. And we basically work on feedback mechanism, 360 feedback. So we have feedbacks covering all aspects. So we, as a team, along with the L&D director, we tend to look at the feedbacks and see where the gaps are. And we tend to address those gaps whenever we get to see that feedback.
Yeah, I think it's a very well thought out and very robust process as well. And so, yeah, before we wrap up our conversation, I wanted to ask you, you know, so your experience in this industry goes back to more than 12 plus years. So what would be your advice to, and tips for the budding recruiters out there?
Yeah, I think this is very critical nowadays because recruitment has transformed and is transforming every day, given what's happening with regard to AI and things like that. First thing is learning. Keep yourself open. Learning is the key. Yes. Never shy away from networking and joining those similar sourcing groups because that's where a lot of knowledge transfer happens in terms of what's happening, what's the up-to-date thing. That's the first thing I would say any recruiter to have. Get your networking strong in terms of your peer recruiters or your... There are multiple sessions happening on how to really be a best good recruiter, how to scale up your sourcing skills. Second is branding. So that's been the mantra for DA for the last 6+ years. So know how to build your content, know how to build your professional network, be strategic in terms of how you build your connections, so that the connections are helping you to reach the right audiences in the platforms you use. Make sure that and be creative. If you're not creative, be smart in terms of using those AI. There are a lot of AIs which are supporting the recruiters in many ways. So either be a good content writer or a good creative person or be a smart person in terms of using those technologies to support your day-to-day operations. Now, that's the three things which I would say. Learning, peer branding, and building a social network. So those are three things which the budding recruiters definitely need to do in order to for them to head forward.
Yeah, awesome. Those are some really great tips. And that brings us to the end of our conversation. I had a wonderful time chatting with you, Vinod, and I love the insights and the tips you've shared with us today. So thanks again for joining Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast.
Thank you. Thanks, Priyanka. Thank you once again for providing this opportunity. It was great speaking to you. And it was also great for me to really get those, whatever I'm doing, get those into a clear picture of what I am doing currently and what I can do best. So these sessions really help us with regard to what we are doing and what we can do next. So thanks for that.
Thanks for listening to Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast. We hope you enjoyed as well as learned from it. To gain more such insights, join us for our next episode. You can follow us on LinkedIn at Technical Hiring Showcase page and our website technical-hiring.com to receive all the updates. That's all for this episode, folks. See you next time.